All right, anyways, Judges chapter 21. So we're just taking a 30,000-foot view of these books, trying to get a good, nice bird's-eye view. What's going on? Oh, I forgot to hand these out. Mr. Williams, do you mind? So I have your summary page. Next week I'll try to have them on a podium in the back so you can grab one as you come in. I punched holes in them this time so you can put them in your binder. Sorry I didn't do that last week. But just an overview of the book. Maybe before you read the book, you just take a little glimpse at it. Hey, what's this book about? What are there some key verses in it? What's the theme? Who wrote it? When was it written? What's the basic outline? And kind of this is what that's trying to do. Just as a view before you go in it. I gave the kind of a map illustration last week when you're traveling. I know like the teens or the juniors just got back from camp. Mr. Seatman drove them down. I don't even think he has a map when he goes. It's not that difficult of a route. But I remember when we would go to North Carolina to camp, that was quite a bit further. What was that, about 10, 12 hours or so? Yeah, especially with like a caravanning three vans and a truck kind of thing. I remember hopping in the front of the truck with Mr. Huber, Pastor Huber's father, and like, where's the map? And this is when we had the triptychs. I remember the triptychs, and then the yellow highlighter that went down and they highlighted the route for you. And he's like, I don't have one. I'm just going by memory and kind of thing. So that was a little bit more of a complicated trip than to Butler, PA. But either way, it's good to have a good overview. I'm going from here, I'm starting here, and I'm going there. And kind of what are the highlights of where I'm headed? So kind of what we're trying to do in these Sunday morning classes. So let's read this verse, Judges chapter 21 and verse 25. In those days, there was no king in Israel. Every man did that which was right in his own eyes. Now this really helps explain the theme of the book. And as we'll see, there's no king at, let me back up. The author, I'm trying to figure out which one to do first here. So the book of Judges encapsulates 332 years. There's 12 different judges in the book of Judges. There's 14 total judges. But at this time, the author says, in those days, there was no king in Israel. So when he's writing this, there is a king in Israel. So he's saying, in those days, there was no king. So that helps us understand at the time he's writing it, there is a king. So kind of making that with 2 Samuel chapter 5 talks about, I am getting ahead of myself. Hang on. The theme of the book, let me just jump there. The theme of the book is defeat. As we'll see throughout this, it is just a vicious cycle. 13 cycles of defeat for these people. They are not following God. They are making their own choices. They're doing what, as this verse says, what's right in their own eyes. This is what I think is right. They're not going to buy what God says is right. They're going by what they think is right. And people are having a real hard time understanding and doing truth. And it's really a depressing book to me, if you think about it. Like last book, Joshua, you know, they come into the land, they're victorious. Sure, they make a mistake. Achan makes a mistake. People pay with their lives for it. But then, hey, they're taking over the land. We talked about those three campaigns that they go through. And so here we are in the book of Judges. And hey, let's have that continue. But it doesn't continue. Unfortunately, it doesn't continue. And we'll get into a little bit about that. But it's really, it's depressing. It could be such a great book. It could be a book filled with victories, but it's not. It's a book filled with defeat. So like I said, the author of this book is Samuel. Samuel is the author. So like we saw here in this verse, there's a king when he's writing it, but in those days, in the book of Judges, there was not a king. And then let's go back to the first chapter, Judges chapter 1 and verse 21. All right. Judges 1:21. And the children of Benjamin did not drive out the Jebusites that inhabited Jerusalem, but the Jebusites dwell with the children of Israel in Jerusalem unto this day. So the Jebusites are still in Jerusalem. And they really don't get driven out of Jerusalem until 2 Samuel chapter 5, when David drives them out. So there's no king at this time. The Jebusites are still in Jerusalem. So really, and all of that happens while Samuel, you know, is in charge and a prophet and a priest. So Samuel is the author. It was written before there was a king and before David conquered the Jebusites. And I believe Samuel also wrote, you know, 1 and 2 Samuel. So he has a few books that he wrote. So the time frame that we're looking at. So this is, remember Joshua, let's see, where they came into the promised land about 1405. 1405, they came into the promised land, and it took them about 5 to 7 years to kind of conquer everything. And when I say conquer, that doesn't mean they killed everybody in the land. And the Israelites are the only ones there. They killed off all the Canaanites and the Philistines or whoever was there. That's not what they did. They came in and they established bulkheads. Remember those in the central campaign and then the southern campaign and the northern campaign, these big bulkheads. And then they divided up the land to all the different tribes. And then those tribes were to go and then take care of everybody else that was there. So it was up to them to do that. So they had a good foothold in the land. You know, it was their responsibility to remove the Canaanites and the others that dwelt there from their border. It was up to them. They needed to do it. Joshua helped give them a great head start, but it was up to them to remove the Canaanites. It's often, you could look at it as, you know, I have the same kind of responsibility. God has given me my life, and here's, you know, the border of my life, and what's inside of my life that needs to be taken out of there. What comes in into my life that I need to prevent being there. I have that a border, and I need to be very careful about that. I think about Ephesians 2, 8, and 9. For by grace are you saved through faith, and that not of yourselves, it is the gift of God, not of works, lest any man should boast. I mean, salvation was a gift to me. You think about the gift that God gave to these Israelites. You know, all this land, it was a gift to them. He gave it to them. And they had a responsibility to clear out those borders and to keep them pure, keep them clean, keep the influence out. But we should be reading about victories. This should be a great book about victories and not a continuous cycle of defeat. It's interesting from a historical aspect, but it's and the good stories of victory that God gives through people, but it would be a whole lot better if people just did right and gave great examples of that. But unfortunately, that's not what happened. So it covers 332 years, as I said, from 1375 to about 1043. And that's just about before Saul became king of Israel. But if you add up all the years in the book of Judges, you get more than that. You get like 407 years. But that's because some of the judges overlapped. So for those of you who are into numbers and all that, just remember that some of them overlapped. So that helps with that. I said the theme is defeat, just how God's people are constantly defeated. And for a very general overview, a very outline. So chapters 1 through 2, they're about incomplete obedience. And really, if you wanted just a nutshell of what the book of Judges is about, you could just read chapters 1 and 2. You know, if you got a quiz on it or a test, the Cliff Notes, really, chapters 1 and 2. You know, what is the book about? Kind of they started off and then how they messed up. Really, a good nutshell, chapters 1 and 2. Chapters 3 through 16, that's the detail of all the judges. And you know, some of them we know a lot about. You know, I think about like Samson and Gideon. You know, they have, you know, I think Samson has like 4 chapters about him, and Gideon a number as well. And then some of them we don't know hardly anything about. You know, I think about Jair and Tola and a few others. We basically know their name and not much else about them. But here's what's going on. It tells about what's going on in that time and just really how long the people struggled. They struggled through so many things, really to their own avail. They made mistakes. They went off course. They didn't obey God. really is what it came down to. They just did not obey God. It talks about the time that, not for every judge, it doesn't for every judge talk about how long they were in bondage and how long that they were out of bondage, but it talks about, you know, the number of nations that influenced them and gave oppression to them, like Mesopotamia and the Philistines, the Midianites, you know, all of these different people that God used to attack them, to put them in bondage, to pull them back and do all of these things to them to try to get their hearts back to God. So, and really, and then how long they were delivered. And often, you know, I would think, I heard somebody, one commentator say about the time that they were in bondage was longer than the time that they were free from bondage. But when I looked at it, I think that was only true for like two cases out of the 12 that are listed here in Judges, really. And I have a chart at the end, we can look at that. But really, the time of them being out of bondage, free, rejoicing in the goodness of God was greater. Were greater in many of the times than the time that they were in bondage. And they fluctuate all over the place. Yeah, so that's 13 through 16, just all about, or 3 through 16, all about the judges, all those good stories. And then chapters 17 through 21, those are really just illustrations. Those are a couple of illustrations. And there's some interesting stories in there. I hope you've read them. And you could almost label these as like PG-13. You know, there's a particular story in there, and it's like, wow, really, this, you went into this much detail, God, and this is what happened, and this is the moral depravity of the people. Yes, he did. He went through it. Why? Because I believe we need to hear it. We need to see it, because it can happen. And it shows you just what turning your back on God and where you can end up. And it doesn't take very long for them to get there. So they're just illustrations about the book, or about the judges. But one of the illustrations is really what we'll cover next week is the book of Ruth. The book of Ruth is one of those stories that occurs during this time of the judges, and for whatever reason, God, you know, we have it as a separate book, but thankfully, you know, it's a good heartwarming story. I love the book of Ruth, and there's some great things that we can learn in the book of Ruth. So come back next week, and we'll have a good story next week to go over. But just a great story, and it's just set at this time, somewhere in those within those judges. We don't know which judge that happened during, but one of them, and it's a good heartwarming story. All right, so let's just look at Judges chapter 1. We'll just go through some of these in a little bit more detail. So Judges chapter 1, just the story of incomplete obedience. Look at verse number 1, chapter 1, verse number 1. Now after the death of Joshua, it came to pass that the children of Israel asked the Lord, saying, "Who shall go up for us against the Canaanites first to fight against them?" You know, hey, they're off to a great start. You think about it. Joshua has died. They don't really have a leader. And they what do? They ask the Lord, "Lord, who should go up first against the Canaanites? Who should fight? How should we do this?" They're asking counsel of God. Hey, you know, it's great to start off well. It's really good to do. You could almost say in our own lives, you know, we're about halfway through the year. You know, what was it, July 3rd, right? July 3rd. About halfway through the year, I wonder on those New Year's resolutions, if we kind of reflect on that. Maybe you made some decisions. Hey, I want to get in my Bible more. I want to have a better prayer life. Maybe you want to take care of yourself. I want to eat better. I want to exercise. Whatever it was. You know, I pray that we all spend more time and get closer to God through His Word. How you doing on that? You know, it's kind of a good, you know, we're halfway through the year. How are we doing on that? Just on a reflection, because you can start off well, but really it's how you finish. How you finish, that's really the most important thing. Just as a check, you know, how are we doing on that? Because these people started off well. I started off right. God, what do we do? They're not asking each other. They're not trying to find another leader amongst them. They go to God. Hey, Lord, what should we do? What should we do? They seek God first. And let's look down in verse number 8. We see some of the progress that they're making. Verse number 8. Now the children of Judah had fought against Jerusalem and had taken it and smitten it with the edge of the sword and set the city on fire. And afterward, the children of Judah went down to fight against the Canaanites that dwelt in the mountain and in the south and in the valley. And Judah went against the Canaanites that dwelt in Hebron, Now the name of Hebron before was Kirjath Arba, and they slew Sheshai and Hyman and Talmai. And from thence he went against the inhabitants of Debir, and the name of Debir before it was Kirjath Sefer. So these people are doing great things. They're off, they're going out, they're fighting, they're doing exactly what God told them to do. There's the land, go to your spot and let's clear out the inhabitants, clear out the Canaanites. Hey, let's make this a place that can honor and glorify me. But what do we see? Eventual compromise. Eventual compromise comes about. Let's look in verse number 28. And it came to pass, when Israel was strong, that they put the Canaanites to tribute and did not utterly drive them out. Boy, they're doing well. They're doing well. I wonder if, you know, they're fighting these battles and they're like, wow, we're strong. We can take care of this. And just amongst themselves, like, this isn't so bad. And it's but is it their strength that's helping them get these victories? No, it's through the Lord. The Lord is giving them the power to do this. All of these promises that were made back before with Joshua and with Moses about, hey, like one of you is going to put 1,000 to flight. Just one of you. And God is blessing them, but they get caught up in themselves and they're like, well, we're able to do this. And then they start thinking about it, and then they compromise and say, hey, why are we destroying these people? Let's keep them, and we can charge them a huge tax rate, and they can do some work for us, and we can make money off of them, and they compromise, and they don't do what God tells them to do. God has made them strong, and here we see just incomplete obedience. It somewhat reminds me of, remember Saul? Remember him against the Amalekites, and he goes off, and he's supposed to, what was he supposed to do? Slay them utterly. Utterly. He's supposed to kill all of them. And what did he do? He kept the best of the sheep, kept the best of some of the sheep, and he kept the king, remember King Agag, and kept him alive. He thought he was doing the right thing. Let's keep some of the best of it. But just a compromise is what he did, and that's what we're seeing here from the children of Israel, compromising, the incomplete obedience. Verse number 21, let's just back up a little bit. And the children of Benjamin did not drive out the Jebusites that inhabited Jerusalem, but the Jebusites dwell with the children of Benjamin in Jerusalem unto this day. So here's the tribe of Benjamin, and they're not completely destroying the Jebusites. Look at verse 27. Neither did Manasseh drive out the inhabitants of Bethshean and her towns. Verse 39. Neither did Ephraim drive out the Canaanites that dwelt in Gezer, but the Canaanites dwell in Gezer among them. Verse 30. Neither did Zebulun drive out the inhabitants of Kitron. Verse 31. Neither did Asher drive out the inhabitants of Aco. Verse 33. Neither did Naphtali drive out the inhabitants of Bethshean. Wow. All of these people, it's almost like they're like living in different areas, but they're all doing the same thing. They're all not doing what God told them to do. They're all compromising. They're all not driving everybody out. Boy. We are stronger, but we are not going to drive them out. They're like, we can do this. We're strong. We can take care of ourselves. We can deal with that. That can help us. Why would I destroy them if they can work for me and pay me? And you see the compromise that's going on and what they're allowing to stay in their lives? That should not have happened. They should have followed through on what God told them to do. And you know what? It's going to come back and haunt them. Going to come back and haunt them. Maybe at some point in your life, it's like, boy, I wish I would have taken care of that. If I would have, maybe you're some construction project, you're working on something, and you take a shortcut, and then it comes back. I wish I would have spent a little bit more time sanding this or whatever it is. You're painting your house, or there's something, your floor is a bit uneven. I think of the gym up there. Maybe try to roll a marble in the gym. That's why we'll never have the Pinewood Derby race up there. You try to find the level, and you know, if you pour water, you know, there'll be puddles everywhere. I wish we could have up there done like a floor leveler. I don't know if the basement would have been able to support that. That's an old hand-dug basement. But it's the best. We'll just take what we got. But sometimes you just got to do the best you can. But for these people, they should have done, obeyed God. No compromise. Don't compromise. But you think, just the the penalties and the sufferings that they had in their lives because they did not obey, because of their compromise. All right, let's look at chapter 2. So they started off well, but eventual compromise came in. Chapter number 2. In the beginning here, we see an angel that God sends to them. Verse number 1. And an angel of the Lord came up from Gilgal to Bochim and said, I made you to go out of Egypt and have brought you unto the land which I swear unto your fathers, and I said, I will never break my covenant with you. So he goes back. God sends his angel to Gilgal. Remember where Gilgal was? That's like right where they crossed over the Jordan River. It's like right there. Okay, Jericho was like very nearby. It's almost like back to where they started. Back to where they started in the land. That's where God sends them and reminds them, hey, you should have been doing this. You need to get back to where you started. You got off track over the last period of time here. Let's get back. And really, chapter number 2 is really a good synopsis of the whole book. And we'll look at a couple of things here, but it's really a great synopsis of the whole book. Let's look at verse number 11. And the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord and served Balaam. And they forsook the Lord God of their fathers and brought them, which brought them out of the land of Egypt and followed other gods. Of the gods of the people that were round about them and bowed themselves unto them and provoked the Lord to anger. And they forsook the Lord and served Baal and Ashtaroth. Wow. You see the digression that happened from chapter 1, verse number 1, where they're seeking the Lord, asking, you know, who should go out first? What should we do? You know, give us direction. And here we are, chapter 2, verse number 11 through 13. And what are they doing? They're serving the false gods that are all around them. They've forsaken the Lord, and they're serving Baal, they're serving Ashtaroth, they're serving these. Ooh, this is the beginning of the end. Their heart was divided in what they were doing. And I heard this, and this really applies. Defeat is not seen until long after the compromises are made in your heart. You make a compromise in your heart, you can do it today. Let's say a besetting sin in your life, or there's something that comes up, and you say, and you choose wrong. You make a compromise, like these children of Israel did. I am not going to fight that battle with those people. I can charge them taxes. They can plow my fields. I'm going to do that. And that decision was made on some day. And then this happened some period of time later. Okay, some period of time later. But that compromise happened that day, but really the fruit from it, years later. And that happens with us. You know, you make a decision, and you know what they say, that the ships come in, your ship comes in, and it's, what's it loaded with? You know, just waste. Nothing that's going to be helpful to anybody. What a waste. Why did I make that decision? Let's be careful with the compromises we make, because they impact a lot of things. Not only yourselves, your family, people around you. It is dangerous. And thousands of people lost their lives here. Thousands of people were turned away from God, following false gods. Defeat lingers long after those decisions that were made in our heart. And that defeat is there. And just trying to dig yourself out. I can think of many people who chose wrong. And you can think of people that used to come here. I'm not going to name anybody. I don't have to. That people's names can just pop into your head. And they chose, I'm going to do that. And how many of them overcome that compromise and come back? Let's not even say here. Just say somewhere and get back to God. Get back in church. Get their life straightened out. That seems very hard to do. It happens. Thank the Lord it happens. God is long-suffering. He is gracious. You know, I think about that 90 and 9, that one sheep that wanders away, and Jesus goes out and is looking for him, wants him to come back. I need you. But how many of us just stay out? And just all the distractions of the world, and they get caught up in that, and then you know, you talk to them one way, and they have a mindset, they're praising the Lord with their Bible reading, and then it's like they have this whole worldly philosophy that's moved into their mind, and they can justify everything and know this is the way. Like, that's not how you talked, let's say, 2 years ago when I saw you. And that just gets right in, and be very careful of that. It's very hard to overcome. So that we see the beginning of the end in verses 11 through 13. And then verse 14. And the anger of the Lord was hot against Israel, and he delivered them into the hands of the spoilers that spoiled them, and he sold them into the hands of their enemies round about, so that they could not any longer stand before their enemies. So here we see God delivering them over to the spoilers. So you think about spoil at this time, you know, when they would fight against somebody else, and they would just take those belongings, the spoils of victory that they would get. But God really takes all of their resources from them. All of their resources takes them, and we see that they're no longer strong, because God is not with them. He is not helping them. I think about the parable of the talents. Remember that one where the three men were given, you know, a certain amount. I think one was, you know, there's like, I think two of them. But there's one, one was given 10, one was given 5, and one was given 1. And what did the 1 do? You know, he buried it in the ground. And then he's like, hey, here it is. You know, I got it for you. He didn't do anything with what he was given. And what did the master do to him? He took it away from him. He took it away. Well, if you're not going to use that, I'm going to take that away from you. Boy, I could use that in our lives. You know, if I'm not going to use, let's say, my singing ability, and you all know I have a wonderful singing ability, especially those people over here know that. You know, if I was out, you know, in the nightclub singing, you know, God could just take that. Yeah, perish the thought. You know, singing. I think the microphone's off half the time when we sing. Nathan and I, we have his mic on, mine off, kind of thing. But either way, whatever talent God has given you, if you're not using it for Him, don't be surprised if that just goes away. That God just takes that from you. He gave that to you, and what are you using it for? Are you using it to honor and glorify Him? Are you wasting it, or are you doing the opposite? Are you doing something wrong with it? Are you serving the world with it? No matter. And God gives so many talents to so many different people. You know, just being able to have relationships with people, just speak to people, being just able to do that, or with numbers, with money. All the stuff I heard about junior camp this week, you know, Friday night when they got home, my wife and I just sat on the porch and I just listened to her tell me all about junior camp. And one thing, and it's funny, I mean, you can talk to, you know, 30 different people that went to junior camp and the different things that stand out to them. But they're talking about Zonk. You guys all know the game. And she said, Pastor Cohen is up there running Zonk. And she said the way he is with those numbers, just because it's like every number, like it's doubled and then doubled and doubled. But he, like, it's like, you know, he's got Excel running in his brain and is able to spit the next one out. But just, you know, whatever talent God has given you, and he's given, I believe he's given everybody something. He's like, no, I don't have anything. Something. God has given you something, and he's got a job for you to do. Are you serving him with it, or are you just, you know, wallowing? And like, I can't be used. I can't do anything. Yes, you can. You can. You're here for a purpose. You're here to serve him. These people were here for a purpose. God wanted to reach the world through Israel. But what are they doing? They're compromising. They're turning their back on him, and he takes everything from them. He delivers them to the spoil. God diminishes their resources, their strength, and their ability, and they're no longer the people that they used to be. God judges them by letting them have their own way, their own way. I think about Romans chapter 1 with the people. Basically, God turned them over to their vile affections. All right, that's what you want? Go ahead, you can have it. It's kind of like a hands-off. Okay, that's what you want. You know, hands-off is, I think, one of the worst judgments that God can have in your life. And I knew a preacher one time, he said, my worst fear is that God would put me on a shelf. Put me on the shelf. And you know what? He's on the shelf today. He's on the shelf today. Which is grieves my heart. You know, that didn't have to be. He made some decisions, and he's on the shelf. And you know what? And he's in this same thing. You know, wallowing. God has taken things from him and just wallowing. Anyways, but just the hands off. I heard a good approach, a good illustration about a hands off. There was a mother who had two children, two boys. And their cousin would babysit for them often. They loved their cousin. Their cousin was Lori. Her name was Lori. I think she was like maybe in her mid-20s or so. She was a lot of fun. She would take them to McDonald's. And, you know, two kids, 7, 8 years old, two boys love McDonald's. You know, I don't think we have taken our kids to McDonald's. Wendy's is their place of choice. Gotta try a few at like Burger King or something. You know. Anyway, Chick-fil-A. Yes, we have been to Chick-fil-A. That's a good one. I like that. But so these two boys were like, hey, Lori takes us to McDonald's. She seems like such, we love Lori. Let's have Lori be our mother. I want Lori to be our mom. So their mom comes home and they're like, Mom, you've been great. You know, we love you, but we want Lori to be our mom now. And she's like, oh, okay. So unbeknownst to the two boys, Mom and Lori go off to the other room, and then Mom for a few minutes, and then the mom comes out and she starts packing her bag and says, okay, Lori's your new mom now. And and they're like, well, that was easy. A lot easier than I thought it was going to be. And so she like gets in the car and pulls out. And they're singing, you know, ding dong. You know, they're like, no, we love you. Come and visit, you know, sometime. But and so they're just like, wow, that was great. We're going to be going to McDonald's every day. You know, we're going to be no bedtime. Watch whatever we want. We can do whatever we want. You know, Mom's hands off. But Lori comes and says, well, and Lori, I guess, was like big, like 6'2" or something. And she says, well, I'm your mom now, and what you just did to your old mom, that was very disrespectful. So the first thing we're going to do is get a spanking. And so like, oh, I'm not so fond of this. What's going on here? My mom is much smaller, and I want one of my mom's spankings. I don't want a spanking from you. You're huge. You're going to destroy me. And so I want my mama. These boys are crying out. And about 3 minutes later, Mom pulls back in the driveway and comes out, and the boys just run to Mom, Mama, Mama. And they're just, but Mom for a little bit just, all right, hands off. Hands off. That's what you want? Go ahead. Take what you want. But boy, and then they found out what they wanted was not at all what they wanted. And there's so many things in our lives. You know, I want that. That is going to make me happy, whatever it is. And how many times have we done that? There's something, and then you get it, and it's just, nope, then the next thing. But so many things just come into our lives, and just, that's not going to do it. But just be careful that we don't get in a position where we want, where God takes his hands off. You're not listening to anything I tell you to do. You're doing your own thing. You're running your own race. That's extremely dangerous to be hands off. But then in verse number 15, whithersoever they went, the hand of the Lord was against them for evil. As the Lord had said, and as the Lord had sworn unto them, and they were greatly distressed. So here's, we see in verse number 15, the hand of the Lord is against them. And it says, you know, as the Lord had said. Well, where does he say that? Hold your hand here. We'll be back. But go to Deuteronomy chapter 7. Deuteronomy chapter 7. This is like, remember Deuteronomy where Moses is preaching those three sermons? This is about 40 years, like one generation before. About 40 years ago, Moses preached this message to these people. Deuteronomy chapter 7 and verse number 1. When the Lord thy God shall bring thee into the land whither thou goest to possess it, and hath cast out many nations before thee, and he names all these nations that he cast out before them, the Hittites, the Girgashites, the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Perizzites, and the Hivites, and the Jebusites, seven nations greater and mightier than thou. Only by God's strength are they able to defeat those. Verse number 2, and when the Lord thy God shall deliver them before thee, thou shalt smite them and utterly destroy them, and thou shalt make no covenant with them, nor show mercy unto them, neither shalt thou make marriages with them. Thy daughter thou shalt not give unto his son, nor his daughter shalt thou take unto thy son. For they will turn away thy son from following me, that they may serve other gods. So will the anger of the Lord be kindled against you, and destroy thee suddenly. Hey, God warned them before, right here in chapter 7 of Deuteronomy. Hey, you're going to go in, defeat these people, destroy them utterly. Don't make a covenant with them in verse number 3. Don't show them mercy. Don't intermarry with them. Verses 3 and 4, it'll turn your heart away from me. And in verse 4, and for his anger will be kindled against them and destroy them suddenly. Hey, don't do this. I'm going to have to destroy you. Hey, and that's exactly what we see here in verse number 15. God told them exactly what would happen. He warned them. He warned them about that. Hey, I'm going to have to come against you. But look at verse 16. Nevertheless, I'm so thankful for nevertheless, for the long suffering of God. Even though we make mistakes, even though these people make mistakes, he loves us. He loves us. Love them. Nevertheless, the Lord raised up judges, which delivered them out of the hand of those that spoiled them. Excuse me. So I'm so thankful for that. For that, even though they did exactly what he told them not to do. Don't do this because I'm going to have to come against you. And they did that. He said, all right, I'm going to have to come against you, but I'm going to help you too. But I still love you. I still want to help you. And so we see this vicious cycle in the book of Judges. And this is on your summary page. I remember teaching Sunday school, there's like a brief one of this, but it's basically the people are blessed of God. No, I'm good. Anybody else have allergies that kind of, and we need some rain to bring down all the pollen out of the air. Right? You know, had a little bit, I don't know, we're getting off. I got like, well, that says I have 19 minutes left, but according to Mr. Bauman, I have like a half an hour left, right? He's been going like right up to like 12:30 almost. Anyways, we'll see how it goes. No, I'm okay. Please, no, we're good. The people are blessed of God. The people are blessed. They're doing well. You know, as you see, hopefully you've read the book of Judges and you see this. They're doing well. They're prospering. And they take the credit themselves. Hey, we're doing great. Look at everything I'm doing. Everything I plant, you know, I get tenfold. Everything I do, it's going wonderful. And they just get lax in their ways. And they begin to compromise with the people that are around them. And then that angers the Lord. And just according to these couple of verses in chapter 2, he comes against them. And he allows an enemy to come into their lives and to put them into some kind of bondage. And then what do? They realize, whoa, without God, I am weak. I am weak. Before I thought I was able to do all this myself, but now I realize without God's hand, I am weak. I am weak. And then what do? They cry out for deliverance. Lord, I can't do this. I need your help. I need your help. Please get me through this. And what does God do? He raises up a judge, a deliverer to come in and help them to overcome that oppressive nation, whoever they are, whatever they're doing, and delivers them back to freedom. And what do? Then they have a time of rest and a time of blessing, and then they say, wow, everything I'm touching, everything I'm doing is great, and then they take all the credit themselves, and then you see the cycle. And that happens 13 times in the book of Judges. There's 14 judges. I probably meant to cover this earlier. 12 judges listed in the book of Judges, but then there's two others. Then there's Eli, who the Bible talks about as a judge, and then Samuel. You know, we don't often think of Samuel as a judge, but the Bible calls him the last judge before King Saul. So, but we'll be getting into that in the next couple of weeks. But it's just this vicious cycle of the book of Judges. Chapter 2, verse number 17. And yet they would not hearken unto their judges, but they went a whoring after other gods, and bowed themselves unto them. They turned quickly out of the way which their fathers walked in, obeying the commandments of the Lord, but they did not so. Look at that. They turned quickly out of the way. That's crazy. Quickly. And when the Lord raised them up judges, then the Lord was with the judge and delivered them out of the hand of their enemies all the days of the judge. For it repented the Lord because of their groanings by reason of them that oppressed them and vexed them. Boy, this cycle just goes over and over and over again. But before we're too hard on the Israelites, could we not turn the mirror around and look at ourselves? Isn't this the same story of our lives? How we're just, you know, things are going well. Hey, everything I can do, look at this. And then I make compromises. And then I get caught up in my sin. And then, Lord, help me. And he helps me. And then I'm rejoicing again. Hey, everything's going great. And then, has that ever happened to anybody? Just go, like, why? You mess up. And you get, and Lord, deliver me. That happens to us. Thankfully, Romans 15:4, for whatsoever things were written aforetime were written for our learning, that we through patience, that's perseverance, and comfort, encouragement, of the scriptures might have hope. Might have hope. Hey, let's see these examples of what's going on with these people, and let's use those as an example. Hey, I need to learn from other people's mistakes. And then really, chapters 3 through 16, so that's 1 through 2, I got like 7 minutes left, but it's okay. That was the plan. Chapters 3 through 16, the 12 judges that were listed there. We know about Gideon. We know about Samson. You think about those two. Gideon is afraid of his own shadow. You know, really, and God is going to use this guy. He's hiding while threshing wheat. God is going to use this guy. I never saw that. I remember Pastor Heber preached a message on that. Yeah, he's down in the threshing floor, you know, or they're supposed to be pressing grapes. Yeah, and he's threshing wheat. You know, he's hiding from these people. Yeah, hey, thou man of courage, you know, what? I'm hiding over here. And then Samson. Think about all the flawed people. Samson and his sensual sins and everything that he's involved in. God is using flawed people. And I'm wondering, was there anybody like Noah, you know, that was doing right amongst everybody, or was everybody a mess? And like, all right, I'm going to have to use you. That's the best. That's all I got. But everybody, you know, these flawed people. And then chapter 17 through 21, just the illustrations. And let me encourage you, I know, like with your children, reading these chapters. These chapters might need some special navigation through. There's some very terrible things that happen in these chapters. but there are things, some of the things that happen when you turn your back on God. And it really could be the best example of America. Right here. As a nation, we have turned our back on God. And what do we see going on around us? Just three quick things. Religious apostasy. You know, we kind of see that in one of the stories where the Danites, they come and they rob Micah of his gods, and there's a Levite there, and they take him with us, and the people are going off, and they're basically worshiping their own way, you know, where God isn't really even a part of it. They're just worshiping their own way. They're basically worshiping idols. And when you're worshiping an idol, what are you basically doing? Pretty much worshiping yourself, and you're just, hey, look at all this and all this sound and everything that's going on. Just the religious apostasy. What happens when people subtract God from worship? Basically just worshiping yourself. What makes me feel good? What do I enjoy? All the moral principles attached to God just fade away. All that, you know, that God said, you need to do this. You need to stop doing that, and that just goes away. Hey, whatever makes me feel good, that's what I'm going to do. Just this religious apostasy. And then the moral degeneracy. You know, all the occurrences and responses are horrific in a couple of these chapters. You think, I don't want to talk about the story. You can read it on your own time. But it's the result of leaving absolute truth in the rearview mirror. Like, I'm not looking at that anymore. I'm not dealing with that. We're going this way. And what happens? You have moral degeneracy. Just your moral, there's like nothing. Whatever you want to do, whatever makes you feel good. And then the total lack of value for human life. And I think we could see that all today. You know, I think about, you know, what are women here in these chapters are treated like pieces of cattle. You know, they're cut into pieces, this one woman. Just look around to see. You don't have to go into the book of Judges to see what it was like then. You could look around you today to see what it was like back then. You think about, you know, if you have if you have kids or influence on anybody, I just think about these teenage kids, or even younger nowadays, that just play video games all day long. And what are they doing? Just killing. And, you know, you just do that long enough, and that's in your head. The value of human life just goes down and down and down. You think about abortions. You know, if I'm thankful for this, the Supreme Court and the stand that they took, but how many, you know, tens of millions of abortions have taken place over the last many years? Just a lack of value for human life, and that's where we end up with when we turn our back on God. The moral depravity, moral degeneration. The religious apostasy, just the lack of value on human life. We need revival and we need repentance. I've turned my back on God. I need to get right. If you're stuck in one of these cycles of the book of Judges, like, hey, I'm just caught up in sin. I need to be delivered from my sin. Hey, we see the grace of God all throughout the book of Judges. How many times has your kid done, or somebody you know, done something wrong, and they come and apologize to you? They're like, okay, and you get it right. And then they do it. Let's say 10 minutes later, they do it again. Do you forgive them the second time? It's a little harder. And then let's say they do it the next day, and it's like every day they keep doing the same mistake. How frustrating does that get to you? We just dealt with this yesterday, and now you're doing it again. And you see more. Do you see the long-suffering of God throughout the book of Judges? 13 different times they go through this cycle. That's an interesting number, 13, a number of curse that we often see. But God forgives them every single time. He helps them every single time. We could let that be a lesson. God still loves me. He wants me to do right. I need to get my life straight with him. I need to repent and follow him. People need to find God again. And we need to find our moral compass by finding God again. Some people's moral compasses are just broke. You know, just north doesn't point north anymore. It's just whatever I want to do, whatever makes me feel good, just let everything in, whatever I want. Let's be careful with that. That's so dangerous. That's so important. Really, the book of Judges should, I forgot. Here's our last, I spent so much time on this stuff, I should show it to you guys. So here's the list. I couldn't fill in everything. The Bible doesn't have, every tribe for where the judges were from, but just like the years oppressed and then the years of rest, you can see many of these, here they were oppressed for 8 years, but they're 40 years of rest, 18, and then 80 years of rest. Not all, but here's like with Samson, 40 years they were oppressed, and they had rest for 20 years. So it's not every time, but it's just, how long did it take? How long did it take for them to cry out? How long did they wallow in their sin and before they reached out and said, until the prodigal son came to himself and said, what am I doing here? I'm eating the pigs. How long does it take? So don't stay there. Don't take that long. Let's get back to him. All right, so next week we'll look at a much better, much more encouraging, hopefully, book, the book of Ruth. I love the book of Ruth. So many good examples and things here. So hopefully you come back for that. And I encourage you to read it this week. It's only 4 chapters. I know some of these books are a bit longer, maybe tricky to get through in a week, but read the book of Ruth, and that'll be a blessing to you. And just how it fits right in. Some of these horrible things going on, but here's a great example of God's grace through here. All right, let's pray. Dear Heavenly Father, Lord, thank you for this morning. Lord, thank you for this book. Lord, thank you for the example that we can learn from. Lord, we don't have to look far to see the same kind of situation that was happening these many, many years ago. But Lord, help us to take heed from what was going on here. Help us to follow you. Help us to love you. Lord, help us to check ourselves to see if we have stepped aside or turned our back on you in any way and get back and close to you. Lord, you love us so much. I'm so thankful for it. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.